And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder's news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, No Direction's everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy, James.
Hey, I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
James, it's feeling kind of lonely in chat tonight.
Why so?
It's just you and me. The last two episodes, we've had like five people.
True. You know, it was a lot less production work, and I was like, oh, this is going to be easy, and then it became worse as it just hated any video feed existing at all. So, yeah, that's resolved now. I kind of perform more people, less things broke.
Zoom was kind of like, violence? Violence. Mm-hmm. Speaking of violence, yeah, we're talking Starfinder tonight. We have just done several different, we did two sessions of Starfinder, and we did a character building session, and we did like a really kind of overall first impressions. And when I say violence, I don't mean we're going to rip this game apart, because we're not. I mean, Starfinder is a game where you fight everybody all day. That's what the game is. It's violence.
It's a violence simulator.
Yeah, right? That's the best part. So, James, I put together two very short bounty-length scenarios. We played for about an hour and a half, 2 hours both times, yeah?
About that, yeah.
Yeah. So, I want to hear your thoughts, since you played your lovely Solarian in two games, once at second level, once at 10th level. I mean, you got a pretty good tasting of everything that class has to offer, almost. There's like half of the class game left, but it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, there were the options that I didn't try were the different weapon types, the other photon attunement, and a bunch of other options, but I got to do one through line, which felt good for seeing how a character progressed. It'd be also good seeing how it goes into level 15 or level 20, kind of going with what I'm you know, able to get there.
I got a kick out of the second game. You didn't summon your solar weapon once, you just bit people with your mouth.
Yeah, I had that ability in the first game, but then when we were doing the second game, especially, I realized that the range was very short, and there just wasn't any reason to use it when you had as much movement as you do in Starfinder Second Edition.
That's very interesting, because I know that we were talking a bit in our pre-show, and that was something that you brought up. You want to tell us more about the movement thing?
Oh, yeah, I was just speaking with... In regards to the three action system, it generally gives you the ability to move more. Probably one of the reasons why everybody speeds a little bit slower. But it makes it so that everybody has the ability to reposition much more quickly. Whereas in the puzzle piece action system, I don't know how you describe it, the staggered action system, the chance to move is more limited and specialized. So to really take advantage in the power of that is having bigger maps. And I was thinking, with the actual official playtest, how big those maps were to get advantage of that. Because when you're doing a lot of dungeon type content where you're in like a 10-foot by 10-foot room, all those actions kind of don't matter as much, especially when you're early on, because you can move, but there's nowhere else to go. So you just have to fall back to your base actions and you're not using those up. And hopefully you have more things to do. But I know there's a couple times in our sessions where a couple people went, well, I have nothing to do but my last couple actions and do it repeatedly worse, which is fine. Sometimes you're just going to be in those positions, you know, just like a regular Pathfinder. Sometimes you just, you know, do three iterative attacks, you know, and suck on two of them.
True.
So it's just a matter of a difference in play style. And how to get the most benefit out of that. So sometimes it did feel like, especially with that weapon, that if I was in range for it, I was in range to be there. And the only reason to use the solar weapon, which I was using, which was like a finger gun, gravity finger gun, was if I wanted to hit a secondary target. So if I was doing something against somebody and then I was like, oh, don't forget I'm here, bang bang.
Yeah, I'm just gonna, you thought you could hide over there, boom. So of the two games we did, I'd say that both of them had pretty scary encounters. Which one do you think was scarier? Was it the having all of the animatronics out at the same time in the first one, or was it the big thanks killing corpse monster in the second one?
I think the first campaign or first session monster was more herring because it had buddies. Single monster combat feels weird in Pathfinder as you get higher up. In Starfinder, it in general is actually kind of underwhelming. Sorry. Yeah. And in Starfinder Second Edition, it felt underwhelming, but for a different reason.
I'd love to hear more about that. It looks like you're still thinking about it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a constructive thought, because in Pathfinder First Edition, in general, if there's one enemy, that enemy explodes, especially when you get higher in level. You start rock attacking, yeah. And that's pretty standard. Yeah. You have to do stuff to keep it alive. In Starfinder First Edition, when you had an enemy that was over you in CR, you had some options depending on what the fights were, but it was just punch it until it goes away. And as long as you were semi-optimized, you could do that. You'd have to roll a lot of dice, and you do have to do the next man up kind of approach, where as people go down, the next one stands up and you kind of trade damage. You do have to work it tactically. You can do CR +3/+4 as long as you don't get completely ruined by like Saber Sucks. In Starfinder 2e, and this is in part because of the one system that I don't want to harp on a whole ton because I made my feelings on it very known, is the critical failure / critical success rolls for attack rolls feels really bad. Because there's nothing else that you can do to fight it besides fight it, and then you get penalized for fighting it because it's bigger than you. And yes, I know something that's bigger than you and stronger than you should do more damage, but it was doing that anyway because it was bigger and stronger than you. It doesn't need to do double damage because it's that much better than you. So it felt like we didn't have any ability to mitigate that. And yeah, you could take a healer for that, but then that person is relegated just to being an algorithm in the back, and that's not exciting for them.
Yeah, it's true. I kind of feel like a system maybe where instead of like double damage, NPCs like did conditions to you might feel better, like, you know, for getting those crits. Or I mean, I don't know, I feel very split on it, because on one hand, like, I get like, oh, this boss is deadly, he's doing all this damage, and it feels very like video gamey. Like if I'm playing World of Warcraft and I'm fighting an enemy that is higher level than me, he crits me more and I die. But that is an MMO where I press a respawn button and then I try again. And I feel like you kind of can't have it both ways in a game like Starfinder. You either have to have it as like, okay, well, we die, but coming back to life and getting back up again isn't really a big deal, or death is harrowing, but that we have the tools to try and survive it. Like, you can't have this system where you're just a PC grinder. Like, I get that.
Yeah.
And I think that conventional wisdom in the game right now is that, like, instead of CR +3 being the highest you can reasonably do, it's like CR +2. But I do know that when Pathfinder Second Edition first came out, like, in general, that wasn't the design philosophy. So, like, you had a lot of fights in, especially in Age of Ashes, in the Extinction Curse, Agents of Edgewatch. I think it's Edgewatch. They would all have a lot of fights against these really strong enemies, and it was like, oh well, we have to like readjust what players can actually handle. And I don't know. I think that for me, that's one of the hardest things coming from Starfinder First Edition to Starfinder Second Edition. Because in Starfinder First Edition, even at low levels, like, you can take a punch or two. Like, you're not going to instantly drop. And by the time, like, right now, my Teenage Wasteland game, the player characters all just hit level 18. Like, they have so much hit points, I can barely challenge them. it's not even the damage. They do a lot of damage. It's the hit points, like having this giant pool of stamina and this giant pool of hit points.
Yeah.
But like, going from that to where they are in second edition, where like anybody can be one shot by an enemy that's like two levels higher than you, I don't know if I like that feel. And I don't know if I like, it's going to be, I think for me, it's going to be one of those things where it doesn't really matter how much the game evolves or changes. I think that that's always going to feel bad to me, that one die can be rolled at a nat 20 against me and I am out of hit points and unconscious on the ground.
Yeah. I think I've explained a little bit to it, maybe more in private, but that, the fact that enemies are built differently than player characters makes a difference in this. If they were built to the same standard and they were doing this, it wouldn't feel as bad because you could tell where their numbers were coming from. But when they are built fundamentally different, and treated different in a way that you can't interact with it, it's not as enticing, and it's more video gamey, which is fine. But in a video game, every attack reasonably lands.
True.
Like, everything that you do reasonably succeeds, and it's just it's just matching success for success, where in tabletop role-playing games you have a die that sometimes doesn't agree with you, So you can be in a position where you are having fun with your friends, but rolling badly and then getting penalized, and then it can throw off your vibe.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. One of my favorite role-playing games in terms of like Tactic Battler is, have you ever played Final Fantasy Tactics?
I have a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, my favorite one, I never played the original PlayStation one. Everybody tells me that's the best one. I missed the best one. That's fine. I cut my teeth on the advanced games for the Game Boys because I could plug those
in. Oh, yeah, those are good.
With them.
Yeah.
I love those. The first one and the second one are like two of my favorite games. And in those games, even if you are fighting somebody that is like significantly stronger than you, you still have like a 65% chance to hit them. Like, yeah. Is the magic number. And I looked into it, you know, as a designer, I wanted to know why it was so high, especially when you have tabletop role-playing games where that number is usually closer to 50-50 at like certain points. And the answer is that psychologically speaking, people don't actually think that a 50-50 result is fair unless it is in their odds a little bit more. And yeah. So like most video games will go for about, even at your worst, you have a 65% chance of success. Yeah. And I definitely think that's a if there's one thing I can say, and it's not really like a Paizo thing, but it's a tabletop role-playing game industry thing altogether, it's that the industry doesn't really do a good job of looking at the psychology of games and implementing like player psychology into design, mm-hmm. which would be certainly a refreshing take to see a designer do in the future. But for now, you know, we're kind of left with the situation where, oh man, this monster is plus two CR higher and it's burying me and I can't, I'm just scratching it. Like, oh, please stop. No.
Yeah. Like it's something you have to burn your once a day abilities for while this thing is just existing doing that. Yeah, and
thriving.
I think the first fight was more, the first one with the lower level where we're fighting a bunch of different enemies that were mm-hmm. all a bit tough was more interesting and harder, but more rewarding because there was more things to do.
Yeah, oh, I agree completely. And actually, that's one of the things that I like about the three-action system. You get a lot more immunities in Starfinder 1 and Pathfinder 1. Like, you just can't affect me with your ability. And like that doesn't happen as much. Like, things aren't immune to you demoralizing them. Things yeah. aren't really immune. Like, I think that part feels good.
Yeah, I felt like I had good chances to succeed with crowd control stuff, despite not being super. I think I was at where you'd expect for competency. I don't think I min-maxed it. I think I was close though.
Yeah, I think that that's a good overview of like, and I think part of it too is like we're talking about three action system stuff that I don't think the designers are really going to change because yeah. I know that way back last year when this was first announced, we both made the statement that we felt that this game was going, we really kind of wasn't going to be its own game. It was going to be Pathfinder 2E with Starfinder paint. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you feel about it. Having GM'd this game, literally I custom made every monster using the Pathfinder second edition rules for monster building. Mm-hmm. To me, I'm like, yeah, this is Pathfinder second edition with space paint. And I don't think that that's a bad thing, but I also am hesitant to say like, yeah, this is its own unique game system. It's totally cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when I see a 5e setting hack for Game of Thrones at Barnes and Noble, I'm like, I understand the game you're doing there. That's fine.
Yeah, from my experience in 2E, they feel kind of similar, but the increased emphasis on just how combat works does make it feel different. And the options of it make it feel different, and the setting of it makes it feel different. But if you dig down to the bones of it, it is the same bones.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, that being said, like I really like a lot of the ability design. I think a lot of the classes are designed to be more fun than the Pathfinder classes in this version of the game. Like, yeah. like... Wow. Pathfinder started to get better with like Guns and Gears and the magic book that I like that I can't remember its name right now. Like we started to get some really interesting designs. There's a book that just came out, James. It's called War of the Immortal, and it's basically one of the classes is you are a demigod, and it just gives you abilities and feats that are based off of famous real world demigods. Like you could literally make Maui from Pacific Island like culture and lore. Like all of his abilities are there. It's really great. Oh. And I love that class. It's really cool. But like you look at the core class and they were like, we got to make this appeal and got to make it so easy that it's almost boring. And I don't feel that way about Starfinder 2E class design. I don't know how you felt about
it. I felt like at the beginning, Pathfinder 2nd Edition had a lot of stuff that was based around your weapons. It felt very old school D&D, like where a lot of your stuff was about equipment mastery, but it just made it so that a lot of the choices kind of felt the samey between different classes.
Yeah, or like classes felt locked to specific weapons. It felt like I was playing World of Warcraft, which that is something I don't like about WoW. I'm an avid WoW player. I hate weapon locking in WoW.
Yeah, no, a lot of it felt very weaponed or shield or armor locked, like you were really stuck into it, where Starfinder 2nd Edition doesn't seem like it has that sort of limitation. I mean, for instance, the Solarian options for weapons was very long and was very exhaustive, and I definitely read all of it very thoroughly. And it was very many options to create and change weapons. And it was basically just go wild, do what you like. And I really appreciated that, because that is a feature that partially makes or breaks that class. And to just, do I think there's some issues maybe with the scaling or when you get abilities? Yes. But the bones are there for
the
fun.
Bones are pretty good.
Yeah.
I got a kick out of the fact that they let envoys use rifles. I'm like, whoa, this is really rad.
That was cool.
Just give that envoy a full, like, you know, assault rifle. I'm leading from the back.
Yeah, just the Nathan Drake treatment.
Yeah, no, it was good. I think that the de-emphasis on weapons is definitely a good thing. I felt like all of the classes had a core mechanical concept at level one, and level one felt like you could do the thing that your class was supposed to do. Now, are there bumps in the road? Yes. Like, I felt kind of bad for Ryan, that Ryan really could only use one attack. Like, I spin my sword in a circle. If I do a regular attack, it doesn't work because I don't get to use my con. So I'm just going to keep spinning and winning. And that's no shade on you, Ryan. I know you're going to be listening to this at some point. I feel like your class was designed to do that. You played optimally.
Yeah, for the options you chose, it was exactly what you're supposed to do.
Yes, I'm spinning and winning. I love it. But I generally like, but with that one instance aside, I felt like everybody had cool stuff that they were doing, and I was like excited to see the different options people were activating. I am a big fan of how the envoy works in this version of the game. I think that get 'em and lead by example is a really cool play pattern. It's honestly one of my favorites. It feels like it took a hard look at the envoy of 1E and was like, how can we improve this? Oh, what if we took all of these like million little action improvements and we just kind of combined them a little? And like it felt like, because like basically with the new get'em, like get'em is improved get'em at level one, because you get a bonus for attacking as part of your get'em. Like I like that. It's really good.
Yeah, I feel like the envoy especially was a perfection of a previous, or an iteration on a previous class, where it was a refinement on a previous identity. Whereas with the Solarian, it was a recontextualizing of how the abilities would work, of the core mechanics of that class. Even they stayed the same; they didn't wildly change or anything, like how Witch Warper stuff did. But it was a way to expand their power. So it still retained definitely the feel of those two classes.
Right. Well, but I mean, like, also let's be real. By removing the attunement point system, they kind of took out the biggest friction that the Solarian had. You know, like I've played a Solarian to level like 12. You've played one pretty high as well, if I recall correctly. Like the tracking the points thing, was a big part of the class, but it was also like, oh, you can't do this until you have three turns in.
Yeah.
And like changing that, I don't know. I like that mechanic. I think that's pretty cool. I like how it forces you to swap between them. Like every Solarian I've seen has picked one mode and has only done that one mode, and it was usually Photon.
Yeah.
Like our friend Robin was a Graviton dedicated Solarian, and she's the only one I personally have ever seen do that. And it was probably because she took armor and didn't have the damage
boost. Yeah, and also I allowed her some stuff that you wrote to make the armor a bit better as well.
I did it. I wrote a buff. Yeah.
I think the Mystic has a really neat flow with how it allocates points at the beginning.
Yeah.
That shared feels a lot like the Vitalist third-party class from Pathfinder, but a little bit
from
different.
From the Dreamscarred Press one, yeah.
It's
like not broken.
Yeah, so probably could use some improvement in how some of the action economy works on how some of the things are written, but I think that is an interesting system as well, because at the start of the turn, you can look over your stuff and go, well, I have to do this, I have to do this, I have to do this. It creates another aspect besides just being a cleric that's like, I'm just going to heal this turn. It forces you to make choices, because otherwise you are just wasting that yeah. potency. So
I even like the class is weird. It's like it feels very different from cleric or oracle or druid, because like, no, even if you're like, I embody the darkness and the shadows, or eventually I'm assuming they're going to do, I embody the apocalyptic end of all things, but we have to be friends. Here's my vitality network here. We're gonna make it to doomsday together, and we'll watch the world burn in our wake. Like, I think that idea of like, this class is a dedicated support class. Like, the bones are all there. It is like, for cleric, you can play an evil cleric and just harm everybody and never cast a single buff spell. But this class is inherently a support class, and I like that. I think that's cool.
Yeah.
One of the things I'll say is that Starfinder 1E, as much as I love that game, the original seven classes all felt like space versions of existing classes with like one or two exceptions. Like Solarian was kind of special in that regard, where like, yeah, it was a Jedi, but there wasn't really a good, it wasn't the paladin, it wasn't a translation.
Yeah.
You can make the argument that the mechanic is like a robot druid, for example. It's not a good argument, but you could make it.
I think the envoy, people used bard, but I feel like they existed in weird spots that didn't actually overlap.
Oh, I agree. I think that if your example, your answer of the envoy is a bard because it buffs, then sure. But like, they're radically different classes. The bard is a spellcaster that is based around maintaining a song buff as long as possible. And the envoy is an action economy class. Like, the entire purpose of that class is to optimize how you are using your actions to buff your party as much as possible.
Yeah, and also you don't actually use magic as an envoy. Yeah.
You don't use magic.
Unless you want to and choose those feats, but like, your things work in an anti-magic field or in places where magic is all wonky.
Yeah. Target practice in chat says, playing an 8th level mystic with the rhythm connection made me feel like a bard. Also, he's saying, when is the playtest for mechanic and technomancer? I think that's coming pretty soon. I don't recall off the top of my head. I know it's coming. They've already announced that the technomancer and the mechanic will be playtested. I think it's early next year, if I remember right. I can't imagine they would want to introduce a playtest while their current playtest is still going on.
Yeah,
Cryptwalker 76 says January. So I'm inclined to agree with that. I'm not going to go tapping on my keyboard and look in the middle of a live show, but that sounds right to me, because I believe it's in May is when their galaxy book comes out, right? Isn't that what they said?
That sounds right.
Yeah. There's like a faction guide coming out that has like a whole bunch of content for Starfinder. They're putting it out early, which is pretty cool. I think overall, you know, going back to our original topic, like, I think that the classes all felt good. You kind of like went there. Is there one that you thought didn't seem like it was too good when we played it?
I think the operative is very one note from the options that I've seen. I think it's a weapon style. It feels like a weapon lock class.
Yeah.
I know there's options to do things with other weapons besides long range weapons, but like, it looks like it wants to do one thing. It looks like it really wants to do one thing.
Aim, shoot. Aim, shoot, aim, shoot.
It seems like it could have been a soldier style, but the damage dice make it a different class.
Yeah. It's a weird one too, because they kind of took away the main mechanic of being like, from the original operative, of like being the skill class. Like, that is 100% the envoy now. Like, and I agree with that, because I always kind of felt that the operative did too much in 1E. Like, it was the skill class, it was the highest damage birth class. It was like really strong at basically every saving throw. And
good, I agree range. With you.
Yeah, I agree with you that this operative feels like it could be a soldier, but I feel like they've redefined soldier as the heavy from Team Fortress 2.
I actually enjoy so far what I've seen from the soldier. I know it's not as flashy as it used to be, and it is more limited, but I think there's wiggle room to explore a support melee tank. Whether that will matter in a lot of games is really going to be up to how it gets expanded as it goes. But I think there is room there that is unique.
I think the soldier needs an option that lets it use its constitution to attack without needing to use the whirly strike if you're the melee one. And I think that with a couple small buffs to a melee option, honestly, I wish that the ability to do melee stuff was like a feat rather than like, I mean, like, or like you could have the dedicated combat style, but I'd love to see it be a feat. So like any soldier could go and be like, yeah, I'm going to pick this up and I'm going to do the melee stuff. Like, I don't know about you, but like, I always think of like in Fallout where you have the Brotherhood of Steel. To me, the Brotherhood of Steel is kind of what my ideal soldier in a Starfinder game would be. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, yeah, sure. They're running around with Gatling guns. That is the iconic Brotherhood of Steel guy, but those fists are made for clocking.
They got the power fist for a reason.
Right, exactly. And so like, I would like to see that. I'd like to see just more of an acceptance of like the soldier being not like a ranged option, out of range class feature versus a melee class feature, just like being built into the class a bit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I agree with you, what you said earlier, where like, I think that this game is better when the classes do not dictate your weapon choice. And I think that for the soldier, that's, yeah, you have an option for one specific way to be a melee soldier, but it kind of is true for that one. I think it's kind of true for the operative too. So I agree with you.
I think that there's room for that soldier to grow. The operative definitely needs some other expansion on how it does things.
Yeah, definitely.
I didn't actually see too much Witch Warper. I mean, I did, and it felt really cool when it worked.
Yeah, I mean,
I got confused, and then it was like, oh, it's nice.
Every time Rob did stuff where like it's Witch Warper just felt like the class designer understood that having a whole bunch of different actions meant that, and one of them needed to be sustained. But like, oh, when I do my Witch Warper stuff, this means I can save on my action economy a bit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Spellcasters kind of have it rough in the three action system where they often get into this situation where they spend 2/3 of their actions casting a spell, and then they kind of don't really get to play with the three action system after that. And so like this Witch Warper felt like, oh, okay. I understand that is an issue, so we're going to make sure that like you have a good play pattern for maintaining your cool quantum field and that you're still able to cast spells and make weird stuff happen. Like, it felt like a really well-designed, honestly, I think that the Witch Warper play pattern is probably the best spellcaster I've seen out of this system. And I don't just mean for Starfinder, I mean for like the entirety of the three action system. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, and part of this is I don't know how much of this is Rob just being a seasoned player at these games and elevating it, but it felt like there was a clear set of choices that he was going down to get to results that he wanted, and there wasn't much fumbling and feeling ineffective. And that, once again, that could be him just going, well, I'm not going to complain about the stuff I don't have. We're going to work with what I do have. And that's definitely an attitude and play style thing.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain that out of everybody we had on the show, Rob is the most experienced with the system. Like, I think it's Rob, and then Randall, and then me, and then Lauren, and then you and Ryan are like down at the bottom, just pointing together up at everybody else.
Hi guys.
Yeah, like if we had our special guests for the first episode, they were on an actual play way back forever ago. So like, you know, they would have been one step above you, but like, nah, you two were like hanging out together. Like, Ryan, do you want to go leave and go play like a first edition game after this? Why, certainly, James.
Hey, you want to do the attack action? I like the attack action. Let's use the standard action.
Yeah. Let's go and use the standard action. So what are your thoughts on like the fact that technically when this game comes out, you could kind of play anything in Pathfinder in this game too, if your GM allows it? Like, what do you think?
I think that's partially why the soldier is limited in its design choices, because if you start giving it melee stuff, it probably infringes on stuff in Pathfinder 2e. I think I would prefer, I mean, I guess there's a stamina system in 2e as well, Pathfinder
2e, rather. Yeah, it's in the game mastery guide.
Then as far as everything, I'm always happy with more options. There might be one or two things that I'm just not thinking of that will come up to be an issue, but like, I'm fine with issues as long as everybody can just sit down at a table and just go, yep, we're going to hash this out.
Yeah, like, oh, we're not going to do that.
I'm eager to find different ways to kill wizards.
with guns.
Yeah.
The best part is that even though we don't have a technomancer, you could just still kill a regular old wizard.
Yeah, I could just find a regular wizard and just send him to the Shadow Realm. The crusade against wizards continues.
Dragons, too.
See, dragons is more of a just like a joke for one character. I just wizards and horses are like everybody has like a weird thing that they carry through every game that they do. Mine is wizards and horses. Why do they exist? Just get them out of my way. I don't need them.
Do I have a weird thing that I carry through every game that I do besides playing Kitsune all the time?
Kitsune and struggling to be evil.
You're right. I really do struggle to be bad. I really struggle to be bad. I can't turn my brain off. It won't let me.
Even when you do something evil, you get super guilty and overcompensate after.
Yeah, you remember when we played Way of the Wicked? Like that happened every single time we were bad. I was like, they are like, do you remember how like for some reason we made me king, and I was like, oh well, we can do this, and they'll still like me because
you were worried about how much people liked you. It's like, what are you doing? You're an evil person. The only people that have to worry about liking you are us. The people that got you there. That's like Dictator 101. What are you doing? Lava Being in chat says fire extinguisher, and I enjoy that somebody named Lava Being says their trope is fire extinguishers.
I mean, I feel like yours is fire extinguisher too.
Yeah.
You were screwed over by not having a fire extinguisher one time, and then the advice every game ever after you told every new player who green-eyed and bushy-tailed walking into our PFS, they said, "Wow, James, you seem like you're so smart, like you're a venture captain." I'm not. But so what should I a fresh green Starfinder player know? Rule number 1. You spend the money on the fire extinguisher. You carry it with you at all times. Do you remember, like, James is so intense that we play a first edition Starfinder game with my buddy Tim as GM, and James is a nanocyte, and one of his minor forms is a fire extinguisher.
There's also like a car jack. I do all their stuff.
I know, I love it, because like that one is like designed for like, I don't want to say actually helpful items, but like like more powerful items than that, and you just like, I'm gonna be like a mundane toolbox. I'm gonna turn my bees into a fire extinguisher.
Yeah,
how do you do that?
Because fire extinguishers are 15 credits, and you know what I mean. You can't go wrong with safety.
Yeah.
Also, if you have in your house fire extinguishers, make sure they're visible. I got in arguments with my wife about fire extinguishers not being visible, and I'm guessing she burnt something on the stove, and then she stopped arguing with me about them being visible. She wanted them in cabinets, and I was like, you can't have a emergency thing be in a cabinet.
It's true.
It needs to be visible.
It's true. You got to be able to look around at a glance to go, fire extinguisher. It would be like if my emergency brake on my car was like hidden under a nice placard. Yeah. Like, no, I need to grab that and pull before I die.
Yeah, like you had to open up like the center console or something. It's like it needs to be visible.
Yeah.
No, oh, okay. Exactly. Okay. So Lava Beings is the sack of low level consumables. That's respectable. That is 100% respectable. That gets you a seat at every table.
I agree, 100%. And then sometimes it's just helpful. Like last game we played, we got beaten up, and we still have the boss ahead of us. And I was like, hey guys, I don't have to use my wand or my magic, my spells. I have all of these potions from level 1. I'm just gonna start guzzling the cure light wound potions at level 8. You guys want to stop me? I'll leave one, so if I get knocked unconscious, you can trickle it down my throat. But like, if I'm up, I probably have a channel energy, so like that's fine.
I think at a certain point, once you start drinking something, you should have to roll fortitude saves to avoid vomiting.
Oh my god, my stomach is so full of healing potions.
You can only drink milk so quickly in such volume.
Healing potions, it does a body good. All right, so I guess with that in mind, with all this other stuff, if we're looking to the future of Starfinder 2E, what are we looking for? Like, what are we thinking? Because I think our overall assessment is that this game is fine, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I feel like it's fine. Like, it's good. I don't know that, like, I'm going to immediately... Like, I definitely think that I'm not going to stop playing 1E because I haven't stopped playing 1E Pathfinder either. Like, it's... I own that book. I would like to justify it occupying space in my life. So let's play it. Let's go. But... I think that this is a fine game, and if somebody invited me to sit down and play it, it's not like I would reject them immediately. There are games that I would do that for, where I'd be like, nah, I'm not playing this. Yeah. I didn't like Morkborg.
Mm.
It was more. Have you ever played that game?
No.
Morkborg. Yeah, it's like a, think Mad Max, but like high magic Mad Max. And the whole game is based around, you can only really kill each other when you roll a 20.
Mm.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that game. It's very hyper violent for for no good reason, and it's very, it's not really grimdark, it's just very pessimistic about the human nature, is what a good way to put it. Not for me.
Yeah, but, yeah. I think Starfinder 2E is a game that I'd be more likely to play than Pathfinder 2E, just for the, I don't mind what has changed as far as options and play styles.
Yeah.
Like, going from Pathfinder 1E to Pathfinder 2nd Edition, that, you know, a lot of stuff changed there. Starfinder 1 to Starfinder 2, it's an action economy system, it's a couple things, but in general, a lot of it is really similar, because once again, Starfinder 1st Edition was kind of a test run for how 2nd Edition would run in certain ways.
Yeah. I think that's very fair, too. Like, Starfinder 1E is very much the halfway point between Pathfinder 1 and Pathfinder 2. So, like, the jump here, since they're not, like, super iterating on Pathfinder 2 with this game, it's, like, just kind of bringing it a little closer in line. Like, Starfinder was never really a high fantasy explosion magic system, so the fact that, like, a lot of that stuff, honestly, I think that 2E is probably higher magic than Starfinder 1E with, like, some of the stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, like, a ton. Starfinder 2nd Edition reminds me a bit of what I, and 1 and 2, of how I hear people explain Shadowrun, where it's not about the height of your power, it's about the width of your power. And Starfinder 1E, your power kind of grew wider. There was some up, and it looks like in 2nd Edition, it looks like they're doing more widening in that space, which is which is fun, I think. It makes numbers simpler. I know it doesn't seem hard counting to 12 or anything like that, but you know, the less numbers, the better for a lot of people. So you want to make it accessible and easy enough, and also, you can help get younger people into it, which is always a task. I don't know. I'm just thinking because my daughter got my a hand on two dice, and we spent about half an hour just rolling them and adding them. And I'm just like, one day, we're gonna turn you into a player.
Could be good. She's gonna be making the most powerful dragon oracle mystery characters and just destroying everybody. It's gonna be great.
This is the unicorn rainbow wizard.
The unicorn rainbow wizard. I love it. I agree with you. I think that for that reason, like, the jump doesn't really feel quite as dramatic, and, like, I think it's fine. I also think that, like, when you think about Pathfinder, like, Pathfinder gets very, like, I think that Pathfinder becomes mythic without needing the mythic playset. Does that make sense?
110%.
Yeah. And Starfinder never really hits that. Like, I would say that right now, running Teenage Wasteland in 1st Edition, where all of my player characters are level 18, I really struggle to kill them. They have so many hit points, and their damage is very consistently, like, chunked. Like, the damage is balanced well. They just have so many hit points, because both of those pools got bigger, and I just need to punch harder, I guess, with more. but also, like, yeah, it's like, okay, like, all right. Some of that, like, that tankiness is gone in 2E. Like, I can knock you guys out so quick.
Yeah.
It's so fast.
Yeah. But, and even without the crit doubling.
Yeah. Just punching
you. Yeah. The standard damage scaling, I think, is actually pretty fine. I just don't like those spikes.
What they say in Fallout? It's just hacking that meat.
Whacking, smacking, chopping that meat.
That's it. Chopping that meat. Yeah, no, good stuff. I'm positive to see where they're going. Like, I think that it's going to be fine. Like, you know, all right, cool. I think that, surprisingly, also not having a ton of Starfinder stuff come out in a while has kind of made me, like, for more. Like,
kind of jonesing for a hit of the lore.
Kind of jonesing. This could be that lore. Come on. Just a little bit more.
Yeah, come on. The birthday. What about the next birthday?
I haven't had a hit since Mechageddon. Come on. Just give me more. Give me another hit. I am excited. I generally like the Starfinder universe better than the Pathfinder universe. So, like, let's go. Yeah. So, obviously, we know that we're getting a mechanic and a technomancer playtest, which means there is a book that is going to come out that has a mechanic and a technomancer in it. Right. Mm-hmm. If I had to guess, probably either going to be early 2026 or Gen Con 2026. What do you think is going to be in that book? Because I have some predictions that are probably not hot takes. They're probably very, like, mild takes. They're like the mild chili salsa to what could potentially be your, like, da bomb.
Nah, I don't think there's anything too crazy. I think the mechanic is going to be similar to what you'd see as in other pet classes with maybe more modularity. Probably maybe you'll see more influence from things like the 5e Artificer. So it once again, very mild takes of things that you just want to see in a mechanic class.
Yeah,
as far as Technomancer, probably a full redo. I don't know in what way, but probably a full redo, because if it is just a spellcaster that has access to like a spell cache, that's a real miss.
My hot take here is that, you know how like Pathfinder has familiars and animal companions?
Mm-hmm.
I want to see a whole bunch of different class agnostic tech options. Like, I don't want to see the drone be something that only the mechanic can do. I don't want to see like the Technomancer not really being able to have anything cool and fun. Like, one of the things that hit me with the playtest is that we didn't get starships, we didn't get mechs, we didn't get computers. Like, I think all of that is probably going to come in this big tech book. Like, you know, we're going to have like two new classes, maybe a third, but a lot of the modern Pathfinder 2e books only have two classes. So I'm expecting it's just going to be mechanic and Technomancer. And I think that we're going to get probably, definitely starships, probably mechs, definitely at least rules for making a drone. And it wouldn't surprise me if multiple options, at least a Technomancer option and a mechanic option can build drones. Yeah. But I also wouldn't hate to see the Exocortex be something that more people do.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me, because in Starfinder First Edition, they did give the ability for everybody to get one of the pet classes, and there were commercial-style drones that you could purchase.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe just having them have expanded versions of those abilities.
I think that's smart.
Or just archetype into them or something like that.
Yeah, I think that'd be smart. I think that'd be cool. I'd love to see a take on drones that is similar to how Pathfinder 2e does animal companions, but more modular, because... like in for animal companions in 2e, you basically just get the little stat block of those stats and apply it to like a template, and that's about it. But I'd love to see like more of like, ooh, some, not obviously I don't want Pathfinder 1e starships level of fiddly bits, but a little bit of fiddly bits is good. I think that there is definitely a balance that needs to be struck when you're doing these non-player systems that involve building an option out.
I think that
starships, the reason why people don't like them, aside from the mechanic, the fighting kind of minimizing most of the players, is also that like designing that ship is difficult and doesn't have a lot of guidance. Like I remember fondly our engineering buddy building our starship that had no offense but was designed to be unassailable. And we got like what, an hour and a half combat before you decided that the enemy ship just flew away, and we got nothing for that fight.
Yep. We're gonna progress. We're just gonna have fun. I mean, and I think the mechanic has fun modular rules for the drone in 1E. So hopefully that continues. Yeah.
Definitely. I think the mechanic in 1E is good. I think it's a very fun option. I honestly think being in the Starfinder system means that the mechanic will probably end up stronger. I'm also interested to see how they make the mechanic different from Pathfinder's Inventor, because the Inventor is like a Pathfinder class that's based around like making clockwork items, and one of their options is a little robot buddy who like goes around with these little clockwork golem. I think one of the big differences is going to have to be that the mechanic in Starfinder has to explode less than the Inventor does, because the Inventor explodes a lot. A lot of their class features involve them blowing up and hurting their enemies and themselves. It's very funny.
Like making bombs out of them. Okay. I get it.
Yeah. It's good. I actually agree with what Lava Being saying. He says that Nanocyte as an archetype or Technomancer equivalent. I would love to see the Nanite array as like another one of these class agnostic options. Like, I just see that Dustin Kitsune Warlock has just entered our chat. Hi, Dustin. It's good to see you. And we were just talking about now about what we would like to see in the future for the not-so-secret tech book that's coming, because we know that playtest is coming around. And we're talking about like starships and mechs, but also maybe more class-agnostic options that like more classes can tap into. Like, it'd be really cool if multiple classes could grab a nanite array, or multiple classes could grab an exocortex, or multiple classes could grab a drone. Pretty neat.
Yeah, or blackjack, or beer.
Or beer, yeah. I mean, those are Did you get replaced by a Bender unit?
I can confirm nor deny.
That's fair. Yeah, so drone that sprays beer. There we go. New option. Done. Drone that sprays beer. Oh, gosh. We could have the t-shirt cannon from The Simpsons.
You, wait, isn't that just a t-shirt cannon that, like, in real life exists? That's just a t-shirt cannon. They just hurt people. Yeah. Don't get shot with a t-shirt. It's just like a potato cannon. It sounds fun. Don't be in front of it.
No, definitely not. I definitely think that's kind of what I'd like to see. I'd like to see, so it's really funny because back when Pathfinder 2nd Edition got announced, one of the first things that I said, like we did like a, I think Ryan was busy that night. So Param and I, it was either Param and I went on or Ryan and I went on because Param was busy. And we did like a, what do you think that they should do next? And I said, I was like, they should do an ancestry book. I'd call it like the Ancestry Guide or something. And then that book got announced. So here we go. Let's do an ancestry guide for Starfinder. I don't think I'd call it an ancestry guide. I know that you guys want to keep the term ancestry so that it's the same across both editions of the game, but I'd call it something like the like a species census or something.
Species
like,
encyclopedia.
Yeah, encyclopedia species. Just have a whole bunch. Like I think that this game needs to get as many of its fan favorite species ready to play as fast as possible. I feel like you probably want everything in the Vesk system. So like the Ishtikris, Patra and Vesk and Skittermander are all core, so you don't have to worry about that. You probably want a couple from the Aslanti Star Empire since like there's been so much focus on them. And there's also just like a lot of really fun ones. Like people want like Morlamal or Brineri or God, what is that one that is really creepy? The guy that looks like Gumby that Trevor loves.
Oh, the Isoguns. I love the Isoguns. They're good.
No, the horrifying ones.
Oh, the back rim.
The back rim, yeah, those ones.
The greasy horrifying ones. The greasy ones.
The greasy ones, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, if we're being real, like, we're gonna get Uplifted Bear. Like, it's gonna happen.
Yeah. It's okay if the dromedaries got eaten by somebody. We don't need those.
Yeah. I think that if I remember their announcements right, that Galaxy faction book or whatever it's called that's coming out in May that they've been talking about, mm-hmm. I think that one is supposed to have a couple. I feel like Astrozoan was named, but I don't remember for sure. I feel like Astrozoan is one of Jenny's favorite ancestries, and so it doesn't surprise me that it got picked.
I mean, Astrozoans are cool.
Dustin confirms in chat that Galaxy Guide has 3 ancestries. He said 6. He just copied from the product page. It has 6 playable alien ancestries: Astrozoan, Contemplative, Dragonkin, Kalos, Sarkeesian, and Vlaka.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good pick. I'm excited to see them how they're going to do the Space Brains without them being racist, because every adventure I've ever seen them in, they've been racist.
Well, I don't think they have to be racist. I think it's just that's just how people roleplay them, because they're just kind of jerks.
Yeah.
With like a superiority complex. And when you have to maybe roleplay something that you're not familiar with, you fall back to maybe like the quickest way to get to not liking somebody. And that's a really quick way.
It's true. It's a very easy way. You just be racist. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Just be the king of racism. Yeah.
That's true. Nothing takes down a smart person than acting racist. That's true.
I mean, 100%. I mean, in our evil campaign, we had a racist ghost and everybody hated that ghost more than the actual evil people.
Right. No, it was really great because like we were evil, but like we weren't racist.
I like that old man. who got like his soul kidnapped, and everybody goes, that's horrible. And then when you go, he's a racist, everybody goes, well, you know.
You're like, this is his torment for being terrible in life. Well, I guess you're doing Pharasma's work then. I'm not.
I mean, that was Tom. That was not my character. I thought it was weird for him to basically waste a wish on having a second worse ghost that people just didn't like.
Well, I feel like he wanted that ghost because his main ghost got banished so often because we kept fighting all of these angels and good clerics that were prepared to banish demons and devils. So they were like, oh man, a ghost.
Yep, you got rid of my spider guy. Welcome to Earl the Racist.
Okay, so in general, in Pathfinder 2e, we're excited. I think, oh my gosh, Starfinder 2e, we're excited. Mm-hmm. I think that we both agree that like it's going to be fine. You know, and we're excited to see the types of things that get added. Let's go to the after show for 1 second. Let's go back to this topic. Because, like, man, I just, like, when I think of that character of Kira and that spiritualist, like, for context for our listeners, James and I are playing a Starfinder game together with my buddy Tim, and we're playing a first edition Starfinder game, and we're playing a first edition Pathfinder game with our friend Mike. And in Mike's game, we have another friend who is playing a spiritualist who does not like playing the spiritualist because it's just like every time he says that class is bad, I just think of Tom's spiritualist, which is from this Way of the Wicked game we're talking about. And I just, like, remember him casting, like, using 4th level spell slots to cast, like, heal or something crazy like that. Or maybe it was 6th level spell slots. I don't remember.
Or 5th. And throwing people and just generally using the entirety of the spell list. Where our current spiritualist has a gun. It gets wet. And then he yells at his paladin of animal abuse to get in there and fight so he can deliver touch spells through him. It's a train wreck. It's entertaining, but it's a train wreck.
It's an absolute train wreck. It's one of those things where, like, you're like, oh wow, some people just really want to play a dysfunctional person as a role-playing game character.
Some people are going through some stuff, you
know? It's true. James, why don't you tell the people we're listening to a little bit about your character in that game?
Oh, I just play a lacrosse coach. I don't play anything special. He's just the simple old lacrosse coach that's also a gladiator. And he's just doing his best trying to protect the one child that is on this terrible journey that we have for some reason.
I thought you would scream about the deep ocean. That's my favorite part of this
character. Oh, yeah. Also, you know, he channels the fear of the deep ocean and the people and beats them to death.
It's very good.
It's a weird multi-class barbarian, blood rager, oracle into rage prophet. So a lot of multi-classing.
Yeah, I have no idea why you took that many, but it's very entertaining.
Because my saves are very good and other reasons. And I still end up with 8th level spell casting and the ability to cast anti-magic field. So I can cast anti-magic field, rage, and then choke a wizard, and there's nothing they can do about it.
When you cast anti-magic field, is it just going to look like the deep ocean? Like their magic doesn't work because it's so deep underwater?
Yeah, 100%. It looks like you're in Subnautica.
I love it. That's great. I am playing a cleric in that game. I have 1 level of monk because I'm playing this archetype that makes me give up my armor and all of my domain spells. But in exchange, I get like 1 billion channel energies. And let me tell you, you haven't lived until you are level 8 with no extra channel feats, but you still have 12 channel energies. That's very fun.
Also, as a special feature, as a lawful good character, he got to murder one person in cold blood as a treat.
A single person. Everyone else is sitting there killing people. They're like, yo, that's not cool. You can't kill people. You worship a lawful good god. Yeah, that's right. You can't kill anybody. Yeah, well, what is this? This is a hypocrisy. And I'm like sitting here going like, okay, I repent. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have killed that person. You're right. I'm supposed to be better than you. And I wasn't. That wasn't towards your character. That was to the one person who gives me crow about it.
It's okay. My character is a neutral good soccer coach who starts fights with people that disagree with him.
I haven't forgotten. I literally paid a man to help me find my missing parents, and then I lost that money because you started a fight with him.
Yeah, because he was wrong. And most of those people at the end thank me after fighting them. Some of them end up my friends.
Yeah. And then in our Starfinder game, I feel like in that Starfinder game, it's probably the baddest I've ever been as like in terms of like the things I've done.
Yeah, you're terrible.
I'm awful in that game. It's great. I'm playing a gnoll, but I had RFK brainworms for a bit.
Evil RFK brainworms.
The brainworm was like, I'm just going to delete everything in your head and then make you kill your friends if you don't do what I want. And I was like, well, I'm not very smart, so okay, I'll do what you want. And I spent a year sabotaging everything that we did while trying to hide my tracks. And it was really funny because they kept finding the things I was doing, but nobody ever accused me.
We were so confused about why these things kept happening. And we just kept figuring them out and stopping these plans and going, hey, guy with the worm in his head that we don't know is a worm in his head. How can we figure out how to not have this happen again?
Oh, my God. My favorite part was like, So, like, I was like, okay, the best thing I can do is get all of the other, like, NPC leaders in my pocket. So, like, I'm going to go and I'm going to put this brainworm in the Sheeran's head. Oh, no. He had, like, a horrible reaction to the brainworm and turned into, like, a sludge monster from John Carpenter's The Thing. And then everybody had to kill him. They're like, well, it's a shame that this guy was a sludge monster, but we didn't like him, so it was okay. So I'm like, they're whistling. And then, like, we work for Hellion Corp, which is, like, a division of the Hell Knights in Starfinder. So, like, then they sent, like, this dragonkin to come be our keeper. And I was like, all right, I'm going to put the worm in your head. Here you go. Oh, you didn't explode. Great. Worm, why are you still making her, like, you're still, like, oh, what? What? You're playing her true to her personality, where she's just an unlikable, horrible, draconian woman? Oh, you're aggroing James, the person who doesn't like being told no by people who are worse than him. Oh, James is pulling out a gun. Oh, you're dead. Oh, you've turned into a flesh. It's like, to them, like, it just seemed like every person that they didn't like who was an authority figure just happened to be a monster. And they're like, wow, GM, your writing is terrible. Why is every single authority figure that we don't like actually infested with a mind parasite? And Tim is just like looking at me. He's like, you gotta stop putting the brain sites in these people. And I was like, okay, I guess, but like, I need powerful allies. And so I got a brain parasite into a leader on like another continent. And I'm like, great, there's no way this could possibly go wrong. He's so far away, it's just gonna happen way over there. And then he calls James up on the telephone and he's like, yo, you killed my sister. I'm enacting a blood feud. And James is like, I guess, well, if you're gonna start threatening to hurt me, I guess I'm just gonna fly over to your country, sneak into your house and kill you at night. And then he turns into a Garmor. And I'm just like, okay,
we thought that the sign for carnivore infection was just obstinance for no reason. We thought if you were just being unreasonably angry, that was like a rage virus or something. We're like, yeah, that's just it. We just gotta do this. Also, that people that were meeting me with violence were not prepared for the incredible violence back. You don't start stuff you're not willing to finish.
Well, the problem is that not only are you a nanocyte and therefore very competent at murdering people, but also, like, our Mike, our GM in Pathfinder First Edition, plays in this game, and he's playing this, like, Oracle who is, like, he's got the Song of the Spheres Melophile one, but the sound of the universe that he hears is constant battle and just fighting and strife.
I think so, he's just screaming.
And screaming, yes, lots of screaming. And so he's, like, this, like, crazy warrior, like who's just, like, yeah, if you're down to kill, I got an axe. I got two of them.
It's kind of his jam.
It is his jam. Yeah, it's very good. So that's kind of what's going on with us. That's the content that we've been doing. But, you know, here we are in the future. We've got, like, probably 2 or 3 months ahead of us before the Galaxy Guide comes out, before there's any new Starfinder content to do. So, like, I guess, you know, what kind of stuff would you be interested in? I kind of want to do an interview. I'd love to get a retrospective from a Paizo person, like, after, in January, after, like, the surveys have come in, like, maybe some, like, stuff they learned and stuff. I think that would be fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to message Rue and see if I can get them to give us a Starfinder friend. But also, they just might be too busy because they're trying to make a book. Yeah. You might not get that until the book goes to the printers. We'll see. Yeah. I don't know. But if that's the case, like, we'd love it for you to come and hang out with us on our Discord. You can go to nodirectionpodcast.com, and we have, like, a fancy banner where you can join the Discord if you're not here already. Hop into the Starfinder 2E channel. Tell us what kind of Starfinder content you'd like us to see, some things that maybe we haven't thought of. If we don't get any responses, James and I are just going to do whatever unhinged things we want. So if you want to see us be unhinged, leave us to our own devices. But if you like hinged Alex and hinged James, I don't think you ever got that. But if you want to pretend that you did, shoot us an idea.
Yeah. And thanks for showing up. Do you have any shout-outs, Alex?
Do I have any shout-outs? I'm watching Vox Ex Machina, the new season. Fun. Also, a good shout-out is that, like, by the time y'all listen to this, it's basically going to be, like, three or four different religions' major holidays. So if you're listening, I hope you have a wonderful holiday with your friends and your family. Remember to keep the people you love close. And ultimately, the universe is a place where things can often seem unfair. But at least I truly think that this is a place where, you know, it's a universe that does care. So show it other people that you care. Keep your friends and family close. And we hope that you have a happy holidays here at No Direction. So until next time, I'm Alexander Gunas. And this is James, and we're signing off.
Go beyond
with No Direction.